To talk with George Norrie, call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
What secrets did John F. Kennedy reveal after his death? We'll talk a little bit more with Joel Martin, The Haunting of the Presidents, and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Joel, what special things did JFK do after his death?
Well, the communications that we received from the medium about him. Now, what was interesting about the way we did the sessions with the mediums was that I spoke to two different mediums, both of whom I knew, but I never told them what I wanted or who I wanted them to contact. So, in other words, I didn't call today and say, Dorothy, listen, a week from Sunday, can you talk to John Kennedy's spirit? It was completely, as best as I could protect it, completely, you know, a surprise to them.
Right.
So I just called her and I said, Dorothy, can you talk to somebody? That's all I said. That could be anybody. And just give me something that I'm doing as a matter of research with my partner who I'm co-authoring with about something. But I never said anything beyond that. She had no idea what it was. And she said, okay. And when I got on the phone with her, she said, who did you want me to contact? I said, can you contact any of the spirits of the late presidents? And she laughed. She said, that's who you want me to talk to? I said, well, if you can. And so I said, yes. And she said, well, who do you want to start with? I said, how about John F. Kennedy? And so she said, all right, let me see what happens. And I asked her, the first thing I asked her was about why he allowed himself to be so much in the open in terms of that day in Dallas when he rode in an open-top car with no bubble over it. And she said, the spirit is telling me it's because he felt he was above it all, and no matter what premonitions he had, he was invincible. He was immortal. Nothing could hurt him. Who was involved in the assassination plot? Was there anybody who would benefit from it? And yes, of course, the man who succeeded him in office, obviously. Marilyn Monroe's suicide. Did she take her own life or was she murdered? No, she took her own life, but she was under tremendous stress. Did you have anything to do with it, President Kennedy? No, absolutely not. But Bobby, my brother, yes, did. They were having a relationship. Not any secret. And she knew a lot. And when Bobby tried to break things off, she got too upset and was going to talk. Nobody killed her. She committed suicide, but she didn't mean to. She was just trying to relieve the stress she was under from the pressure brought to bear on her about the broken romance and about not saying things she shouldn't and being told.
That's amazing stuff.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And they could not have in any way have known who I was talking about. They didn't know. And then there was another medium by the name of Alexander Murray, who's in New York, and I asked him about, since we had George Bush in the White House and his dad had been there, I had thought about, only in my mind, I had thought about the Adams, you know, John Adams and John Quincy Adams. And I spoke to Alexander, same way, did not tell him in advance who I wanted to talk to or what about. And at the very last moment I said, can you contact the president for me? And before I could blink, he said, oh my gosh, I have John Quincy Adams here. And he brought back, I said, why Alexander, why him? He said, because the father-son thing, which is exactly what I was thinking. So if he was reading my mind, did a terrific job of it, but he brought forth a lot of information at the time that came to be after our session. And it had to do a lot with both the economy and terrorism and world problems And he couldn't possibly have researched it because I never told him who I wanted him to speak to. See, that's one thing about paranormal investigation that I think people are very leery of. And I know Bill Burns is extremely cautious about that and his UFO research, and I am, and everything I do about the paranormal. I don't ever, ever want to do anything that's dishonest. I think it's ethically wrong. And I also think that anything I do that is found out to be a lie about one thing will discredit everything I've done over the past 30 years. So, for example, when I found out the Amityville Horror was a hoax, I was only too happy to expose it, because if you're going to let the phonies get away with things, then you're never going to really get to the genuine.
But, I mean, the events occurred. What you're saying is the paranormal events were
right,
hoaxed. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, yes. Exactly.
Let's go to some phones. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on with Joel Martin on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. A quick program note. It actually comes from Gordon Liddy, and that is that nothing is for free. It's just free, free of charge. Everybody says it wrong, so I thought I'd just throw it out there. This is about Hitler. You were talking earlier about...
the evil of Hitler.
Yes.
Yeah, you were talking about his being psychic and so on.
Yes.
Well, there was a long time ago on the 700 Club, there was a general who was being interviewed by Pat Robertson, and he had been with the Axis and was called up to a meeting with Hitler, a high-level meeting of some kind.
Uh-huh.
And the first thing he reported was that the atmosphere of fear just permeated everything and everywhere. And then he looked into Hitler's eyes, and it was like it wasn't his eyes. It was something evil behind him. And
yeah,
that is probably what made him psychic. My suggestion.
Yeah.
You can look into that. The other little thing that comes from Jim Mars's book, Rule by Secrecy, on Hitler, is that he, ironically, was the grandson of a Jewish man, a Rothschild.
Yeah, I've seen
Jim
Mars' book, yeah.
Yeah, and I had heard that, too.
You know, I just thought that'd be of interest to you all in the group.
All right,
yes.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
A man with pure evil.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, if ever there was a devil incarnate on Earth, everything that's evil is compressed into the Nazi regime and the people, Hitler and the people around him.
What amazes me is how the man was able to have so many millions of people follow him.
Exactly. Well, you said before that business of being able to speak to thousands of people and mesmerizing them. From what John told him, the author of Hitler told me, what he had interviewed former Nazis years ago, they all said the same thing. He had this ability to literally almost mass hypnotize all the people who were listening and watching, and they just simply followed along. It was just an absolutely supernatural ability.
First time caller, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Mike from Rockdale.
Hey, hello, Mike. Texas, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Great show tonight, guys.
Thanks.
Fascinating. Going back to speaking about JFK and the spirit contact with the medium earlier, back in the summer of 91, I was a bystander to my cousin and a friend of his. And I was with, I don't know how we got to talking about ghosts and spirits and whatnot. And I had told them about how somebody had told me how you can make a Ouija board from cardboard, a Marxalot, and just a simple glass. And they didn't believe me. And I'm like, well, you know, try it, you know. So they did, and was trying to contact a spirit. And it actually worked. And they asked the spirit's name, and the spirit spelled out JFK.
Hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, we all kind of looked at each other like, wow, you know, couldn't possibly be, you know. And so we, you know, continue. I stood there, and I'm like, well, ask it, you know, how did it die and whatnot. And it was interesting because it spelled out the letters brain, the word brain, and then it spelled out gun. And then we'll ask it how many bullets or how many times it was shot or whatnot, you know. And it said two. And that's pretty much the only contact. You kind of quit after that, but didn't ask it no more questions. But I thought that was interesting. You know, I don't know if it could have possibly been. I mean, maybe. You never know.
But you don't know. There's one of two possible explanations for it. And assuming everything happened exactly the way you said, and I have no reason to doubt you, you are, when you are dealing with a Ouija board, sometimes getting spirit entities of the kind George was talking about before, the kind that would mislead. So you could have somebody claiming to be Kennedy somebody kind of like an obscene phone call, pretending to be somebody he's not, and telling you something even though it is or it is not true, but it's not really Kennedy. On the other hand, yes, of course you could possibly pick up the spirit of somebody like John Kennedy. It could be either way. Absolutely.
And it all depends on how much that spirit wants to come forward.
Exactly.
Let's move on to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yes, sir.
This is Kevin in Madison, Wisconsin.
Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
One of your fellow pirates. I wanted to ask the guest, there have been a lot of sightings of presidential ghosts, but what about first lady ghosts?
Yes.
Because I seem to remember a story when I was in school about one of the gardeners who was ordered to remove some of the rose plants from the garden, and the ghost of Dolly Madison appeared to him and told him, leave my roses alone.
That's true. In the time when the Madisons were in the White House, James, and I'll try to make it as brief as I can, this would be around the era of the War of 1812, she planted this beautiful garden, and it came to be known as the Rose Garden, of course. But when Woodrow Wilson was in the White House, now we're going ahead 100 years to around the time of World War I, Mrs. Wilson wanted the Rose Garden taken apart. She just wanted the thing dug up. Now, the gardeners were out there, the workmen were there, following the First Lady's orders, First Lady Wilson, that is, and all of a sudden, Dolly Madison's ghost appears. And Dolly Madison, in life, had been a very feisty, very strong woman. And Dolly Madison's ghost said, you touch those and I'm going to kill you, basically. And she went nuts. And the ghost started to scream and rave. The workmen dropped the tools, and nobody would ever come back. And to this day, the garden sits there, and that is the Rose Garden. Same thing is supposed to have happened when Mamie Eisenhower's ghost came around Gettysburg in their house, and they were trying to do something to the front of the house and add some parking space to a part of the house she did not want touched. They saw her ghost, and she was furious and never came back and never touched it again.
How many first ladies did you say were coming back?
Well, there have been a number of them that have come back, but the principal ones who've come back in terms of the most documented cases would be Abigail Adams.
Eleanor Roosevelt.
Eleanor Roosevelt, Dolly Madison, Mamie Eisenhower. Those are the ones that have probably, frankly, the most documentation. And the youngest first lady we ever had in the country, Julia Tyler. John Tyler was in his 50s, married this beautiful young woman by the name of Julia Gardner, and she was in her 20s. And there have been reports that their ghosts also have been seen recreating their marriage, which took place at the White House, and Mrs. Cleveland, the Grover Cleveland wife. So there have been about a half dozen.
Mary Todd Lincoln never came back?
No, Mary Todd Lincoln, no. Isn't that interesting? There has never been a report of Mary Todd Lincoln's ghost. And the explanation or rationalization for why you don't see the spirits of certain presidents or ghosts coming back may be because they fulfilled their destiny here, did everything they had to do, and simply didn't wish to or didn't think they needed to, and simply moved on. I mean, you have Andrew Jackson's ghost back, but never his wife, Rachel.
First-time caller line, you're up with Joel Martin. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Craig in San Francisco.
Hi, Craig. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. George, always, you're great. You're fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, the question for your guest is there, I always wondered if there was a Camp David correlation with the White House there, if they kind of go back and forth there. And is it rumored that there's a room in the White House that is used specifically for that spiritual medium type activity?
Which rooms in the White House particularly? Well, the one they call the Lincoln bedroom has been, it really wasn't the bedroom. It was really Lincoln's war room where he met with his cabinet. And that room has had a disproportionate amount of activity. So that clearly is one of the rooms. The attic of the White House has also been a place where a good deal of ruckus has been heard, and they believe some of it is coming from the spirit of President William Henry Harrison, who was only president for 30 days, rummaging around, because he was unwilling to leave and still looking for some of his things up there, perhaps his coat and scarf that if he wore, he wouldn't have gotten influenza. And so, yeah, there have been a number of rooms like that, the Rose Room, the Lincoln Room, of course, and those would be the East Room. There were several of them that are particularly noted for having ghost activity.
Right. So right now, I'm really involved in the spiritual medium type thing. I always see this room still being used at the White House.
It's entirely possible. They will never tell us. My guess is, this is just a guess. I mean, I've been through the White House as a tourist, just the way millions of other Americans have. But in the private quarters upstairs, where I have not been, from what I understand, the bedroom that Andrew Jackson slept in, whatever it's called now, is a room that has had a lot of activity, and the Lincoln bedroom. If there is any place where you would see activity or activity has been noted and this would go on, it would probably be in there. And it's indeed possible that there is a good deal of, contemporary popular activity or seances or activity going on there now. I don't think they're using the Oval Office that way. My guess is it's in the private quarters just that way.
Right. And have you ever heard any correlation with Camp David to that?
In what way, sir?
Where the spirits, when they're at Camp David, that there's any activity there?
You mean presidential activity?
Right, with the spirits there.
No, I have not. I have to be honest with you. I have no documentation or evidence of that. That was a place that was named, of course, after General President Eisenhower's grandson, of course. But there's not been anything that's ever been released about it. That doesn't mean there hasn't been activity there, but there's just not been anything that's ever been made public.
Did not David end up marrying Julie Nixon?
Yes, he did.
Yep.
Yes, he did.
My memory still works, Joel.
Huh?
My memory still works.
Yeah, better than mine.
What about Carter? We don't say too much about him. Jimmy Carter.
Quite a few incidents around the Carters. Very interesting
really?
Ones. I'll give you three very quick ones. Jimmy Carter, of course, as Bill Burns will tell you in great detail, had, of course, the famous UFO sighting when he was governor down in Georgia. And he always talked about that UFO sighting when he was Governor Carter. When he and Rosalind were married early in their married lives, they rented a house in that area around Plains, Georgia,
mm-hmm.
and the house was a notoriously haunted house. And they stayed there for a time, and there is a documented account of it in a magazine that was written some years ago. And the third incident concerns the fact that once Rosalind walked in when their daughter, what was the little girl's name? She's not a little girl now. But when the daughter was playing with a Ouija board, and Mrs. Carter hit the roof and said, "Put that away, though. I don't ever want to see you near that at all." They were trying to do what they had heard. In other words, see what kind of presidential ghosts they could summon up, and Amy Carter. And she and her friends were staying over one night, and the kids were all playing with a Ouija board, and Mrs. Carter comes in and says, "Put that away."
Well, let me tell you, Ouija boards are not to be played with.
No. I think it's a very, very dangerous thing to do, and I think you get some very low-level entities, and I think you attract some either mischievous or just dark energies, and I don't think you should at all.
Well, you know, and it's unfortunate. I'm sure it was just made as a simple game, but
yes.
Whenever it was constructed, the people who use it somehow open up portals.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And it goes all the way back to ancient Egypt, ancient Greece. They have found items that look like a Ouija board type of instruments, and they understood very well that you were opening up those portals. That's exactly what I believed.
It's like a telephone call to the dead.
Exactly, yes. And I have been witness to those. And you don't know who's going to be on the other end in the case of the Ouija board. And you may not want to ever.
It's a long-distance call, isn't it, Joel?
Yeah, it is.
Stay with us. We'll be back. We'll take final phone calls with our guest Joel Martin right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie.
Newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505. With George Norrie, call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free, 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Lots on tap for our next Coast to Coast program. The first hour, Jolene Blaylock will be our guest, of course. She is the Vulcan sub-commander in Star Trek Enterprise. This is the last season for Star Trek, and she'll be with us. We'll talk about that and also take some phone calls. And then James McCanny joins us, physicist, to talk about his trip to the South Pacific as he witnessed the tsunami, and he's got a full report for us. So that'll be on our next Coast to Coast program. And welcome back to Coast, Joel Martin, our guest. We'll take your final phone calls. Joel, yes. The investigation for the haunting of the presidents, did you get much support in Washington, or did you and Bill have to do this all on your own?
That's a very interesting point. We did it all on our own, and I had some help from some retired government officials. People who wanted to talk about this, individuals who had been in the National Park Service, some who had worked in the White House, others who had been aides to the presidents or advisors or in the cabinet, people close to them. But basically, there was no official help. And the only officials who helped us were those who were beyond reach because they had either not any longer been with government or had been retired from it. So, no, you couldn't get the time of day from the government officially about this.
Back to the calls we go. Let's pick it up by going to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
This is Don from Cleveland.
Hi, Don.
For 13 years, I worked at the James Garfield National Historic Site out in Manor, Ohio.
Oh, sure.
And I've never been a great believer in ghosts until I worked there. The outgoing curator, about the time when we came on board, used to tell us that the Garfields are not malicious, but they love to play jokes on us. And every
time story about James Garfield having lived in the house in Ohio there, not far from Akron, right?
Yep, it's up in Manners, northern Ohio. And
yeah.
They would play jokes, and it would always happen. Things would always happen right around historic moments in his life, like the day he was assassinated,
that's right,
his birthday, and whatever else. And I used to give a tour one time, and I was in the library about maybe 30, 40 feet away from the piano. And as I started to give the tour and started to talk about his life, the day of his birthday, the piano started to play.
Sure.
Four notes.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, the people who lived in that house for many years, I interviewed them, and when he was teaching there at Hiram College in Ohio, President Garfield lived there in that house, and the folks who were living in the house when we wrote the book as recently as a couple of years ago told us just about the most amazing stories I'd ever heard about all of the tricks that were played and all of these paranormal events that went on. And apparently it was at the behest of the spirit of President James Garfield. I'm glad you brought that one up, and I'm sorry I hadn't mentioned it before. But we have a large chapter in there because I interviewed the people who live in the house now.
Oh, yeah. We would hear footsteps going up stairways when the place was completely empty.
Right.
Doors would open. we had visitors actually running out of the house at times when things would go on.
Huh.
We had an alarm go off in just his bedroom, and I talked to the alarm guy. He says, it's impossible. Happened on the day he died.
Yeah.
You know, it would always be around a historic moment.
That's right.
It was amazing. It was on and on and on.
Oh, yeah. And the people who have lived in that house for many, many years, since about 1961, I believe, they have been written about, and they have had investigators in there and some very skeptical people. And all of the people come out of there saying exactly what you just said. It's one of the most fascinating stories of all and can be documented by any number of witnesses. Right there on Hiram, Ohio, near Akron, that's true.
In Menor, yeah. I guess his soul had been tormented because he died so young.
Yes.
But we had a Civil War reenactment encampment in his library one time, and one of the soldiers said that got to go downstairs to warm up my coffee. And as he walked down the stairs, the coffee started to boil in his cup.
I really don't doubt it, because they've had some of the most incredible paranormal experiences in that house, apparently from either Lucretia or his wife or James Garfield's spirit. The people who've lived there have learned to live with it. I know sometimes visitors are frightened by it, but they've never had any reason to be frightened. But the residents have just learned to, you know, live with it and kind of enjoy it, and some of it is kind of funny.
We lived with it for a long time, and we've just joked about it, but they've never done any harm. But it's just all the time.
Yes,
computers
yes,
going awry and just all kinds of strange, bizarre happenings there.
And it's still going on now, right?
Sure is.
Yeah. Hey,
Joel, have they shut off any parts of the White House because of ghosts?
Oh, sure. Because you can't get to more than a few rooms in the White House when you go on the tour. Yeah, that's one of the great questions. Why so much of the White House that does not have to be shut off is they only allow. They'll tell you it's for reasons of national security and reasons of not wanting people to tread all over the what's supposed to be the public's house, but of course isn't. And you know, it's a residence for the president's family. But sure, they have. You can't go anywhere near upstairs, and that's where most of the activity has gone on. So when visitors go to the White House, in other words, tourists, rarely will they see anything in the part that they're allowed to visit. And when J.B. West, who was their head butler, was alive, he told me almost all of the activity was happening in the private quarters upstairs where the public will never go.
Who showed up the most? Lincoln?
Lincoln has showed up absolutely the most of the presidents, of the first ladies in the White House, probably Abigail Adams, possibly Dolly Madison. But Lincoln has... there's not even a close second to Lincoln, yeah.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Hi, Joel.
Hi.
I'm in Washington State. This is Bernie.
Bernie, go for
Hi.
It.
I was hoping your guest could talk about some of the strange visions that George Washington had in Valley Forge.
Oh, sure. We had talked about it before, but I'll be very glad to.
Sure.
In that winter that they were at Valley Forge in 1777, 78, they were having a terrible time. We were really losing the war. By all rights, how we won is a miracle in and of itself. Our soldiers were barefoot and destitute and without clothes and without anything, and the winter was bitter. Washington stayed with them, although his quarters were somewhat better where he lived. But he, despite what some of his biographers, some of whom are very skeptical and even atheists would say, he was a very prayerful man. He believed in prayer, and he believed in a lot of these elements. Now, one day when he was sitting at his table, he saw a vision. The vision was of an angel, and the angel apparently gave him a good deal of information about the conduct of the war, what he needed to do, and what the future of America would be. He told this to an aide. The aide told it to somebody who only was a reporter many years later, and that's how it became public. But many of the things that were told are things that had not happened at the time, and it would appear that that's what gave him the sustenance to fight through Valley Forge, because there was no reason really why he had to be there. He had all the money he ever was. He was a very wealthy man from marriage. He did not have to be there. He could have walked right out then and there. But he stayed, and he said that angelic experience or vision is what inspired him to continue and to battle through that bitter winter and to the end of the war and to see the future of the United States as it would become.
Now, did he really say that we should fear September 11th?
No, that part is, no. I have never heard that part.
That's apocryphal?
Yes.
Okay, and is it true that Teddy Roosevelt saw a Sasquatch?
He saw a what? A Sasquatch?
Yes.
I've heard some strange story about that from a cryptozoologist. In other words, somebody who studies these bizarre, or unusual creatures. I don't know that he ever saw one, but it's not impossible because Teddy Roosevelt was, as you know, a great explorer and went out west a number of times. And he was a naturalist, an explorer, and has stuffed moose heads all over his house. So could he have? Yes. Would that kind of story be allowed in traditional history? No. There is no real record of it, but I've heard something like it. So, yes, it's possible.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right,
great
thank
show,
you.
George.
All right, appreciate you being on the program. Next up, first-time caller line, it's your turn. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, where are you calling from?
Fort Worth.
All right, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to tell Mr. Martin a story that he might find very interesting. I have seen one ghost, and this is some background, is that I am a descendant of John Adams and John Quincy Adams.
Oh, really?
Okay.
And then back in, this happened in Dallas County, and back in 2001 or 2000, I saw John Adams, and he was just pacing back and forth, and he seemed quite agitated. And then I sensed a telepathic message from him, and I don't understand what it meant, but I'll tell you what he said.
What did he say?
He said, "It is time for the second American Revolution." And then he was gone after that. That's all I know. But then that's the only ghost sighting I've ever had.
Okay. It's not unlikely, and it doesn't sound unreasonable at all. In several of the readings I had mediums do, a number of the founding fathers and the early presidents allegedly came through with something like that. They were very strong advocates of free speech and the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, and notwithstanding their own failings, such as owning slaves in some cases, they felt that when government got too large or too controlling, it was time for the people to, again, take over the government and do exactly what you said. I don't like to say that we should have any kind of violent revolution, but that is indeed something that would be typical of what I have heard in messages through mediums from the spirits of founding fathers.
Let's go to our wild card line, Joel, while the clock is ticking.
Okay.
You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, this is Tobias calling from Seattle, Washington.
Hello, Tobias. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I wanted to touch on the late, great Hunter S. Thompson, who recently passed away.
Yeah.
He was a great inspiration in my life, and his death is a very sad moment.
You accept the suicide report?
I'm not so sure. I want to hear all the evidence, and I guess my question is if either of you have any insight or any opinions as to what might have happened.
I do not. Great author, but I did not know him, nor did I have that kind of information. I don't know. What about you, Joel?
I did not know him, but I do know people who did know him. And from the little that I know of him, and I don't pretend to know a great deal at all, he was somebody who was not very happy with himself, frankly, and he was somewhat tortured in, I'm trying to put this as delicately as I can, he was just not a happy man, and he was somewhat tortured with himself.
He had his own demons, didn't
he? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a better way to put it. It really is.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on. Let's go to our West first. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Lewis, and I'm calling from Portland, Oregon.
All right, Lewis, go ahead.
Is there any truth to the rumor that Thomas Jefferson received the Great Seal of the United States from a black figure that stood in the garden?
No, the story of the book, well, I've heard all kinds of stories about what Thomas Jefferson received at Monticello, I guess is what you're talking about. No, the Great Seal, actually, which he had something to do with, is actually based on the Masonic teachings and a lot of mystical activity that the founding fathers were involved in. In other words, most of them were Freemasons, as you know. A lot of them belonged to the Masonic lodges of that day. Most of them, the founding fathers, I'm not talking about the pilgrims now, the founding fathers were not Christians as we define Christians. Most of them were deists. They believed in a kind of a free-thinking attitude, and at the same time, we're very open to supernatural and mystical events. The Great Seal was designed by a committee, and the committee based the Great Seal on ancient Egyptian mysticism, and it based it on whatever occult symbolism they felt was associated with the Masons. You'll find the number 13 running throughout it everywhere, and again, it goes back to the ancient mystery teachings.
Any skull and bone members of the apparitions, Joel?
There are skull and bones, quite a few, actually. Besides the Bushes, there are a number of presidents who belong to secret societies, Masons, skull and bones, sure.
Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. Hi. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Peter from New York.
Hello, Peter, go ahead.
In 1970, I was in the Marine Corps, and I was stationed at Camp David. And at the time, it was widely rumored that Aspen, which was the presidential cottage,
uh-huh.
has a movie theater in the basement, and that the movie theater, people would hear movies being run, and it was supposedly Kennedy in there watching movies.
That's not a rumor I've heard, but I wouldn't doubt it. Frankly, this is what I mean, George, about finding material constantly, new stories and new accounts about people who've had these experiences around places where the presidents lived or worked. And you will find around the country homes they lived in, places they visited, where noises are heard, where conversations and footsteps and all kinds of paranormal activity goes on, probably associated with them. So, yes, it does make sense in the context of our research.
What's fascinating here, Joel, they just don't move on to the other side.
No, I know. Isn't that troubling?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's as if some are coming back to visit, some just can't let go. Don't forget, these are, obviously, you know, not only powerful people, but very ego-driven people. And it's not so uncharacteristic of somebody with a very powerful ego and strong emotion to want to hold on to what was here. In other words, they still want the spotlight. They still want to be in the public arena, if you will, and they just don't know how to let go to move on in many cases.
Wildcard line, you're up on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hey, George, this is Al from New Orleans. How are you doing?
Hello, Al. Good.
Listen, what you were just talking about, I've listened to Coast to Coast for a long time, and it goes hand in glove with Starlight and a lot of other things about ghost phenomena. The spiritualists, when you look at them as a religion, have a concept of what they call the double etheric. They talk about the fact that when you talk about the spirit that's in the body, it has two components. One that's corporal and it's associated more with the energy of the body itself, the corpus itself, and the others that's ethereal. And at time of death, that double etheric splits. And what you would consider the soul goes, the etheric portion goes on to the other side, but there is an earth-bound spirit that is bound to the the body itself, and that is what they contend is are these haunting manifestations.
That's not totally out of whack, actually. That's a theory that you could take back all the way to ancient Egypt. As you may know, it goes way back before the birth of Christ, exactly what you're talking about. It's difficult to use that to explain why some of the presidents appear and first ladies as spirits and why others simply have not. And you still have that conflict about why they have this pattern of behavior going up and down very quickly, this walking pattern, as if they're stuck here, as opposed to the spirit that occasionally visits. But no, that's a legitimate theory.
You know, Boris Yeltsin, when he was heading up Russia, once had his own psychic because he was convinced that we, Americans, were trying to use psychic powers to get into his head.
Yeah, well, that's part of why they. Well, I'm not laughing at the point you made, but it is interesting because the Soviet Union engaged in so much paranormal research during the Cold War years that's what forced us, in part, to have to try to match them. And he may not have been entirely nuts, you know, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not really following you. And it's indeed possible that with a lot of the experiments we were doing in mind control, as well as in psychic remote viewing, we might very well have been trying to influence something, and his people, most of whom were in Leningrad doing this research, psychic research, may have told him exactly that. Now, whether it's true or not, God knows.
The name of the book, The Haunting of the Presidents, Joel Martin, William Burns. Joel, thanks for spending President's Day with us. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's been a lot of fun, and I enjoyed it thoroughly, George, as always.
Good luck with the book. For Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.